This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Adam Ragusa, in for Meghna Chakrabarty. The International Seafood Show was held in Boston this week. The conference sessions dealt with topics like sustainable seafood, aquaculture, and implementing a sustainable seafood program for your restaurant.
With the world's fish stocks under assault, it's hardly surprising that the international seafood industry has sustainability on its mind.
But missing from this week's agenda, human rights violations, forced labor, and slavery. While the seafood industry takes pains to be transparent about its environmental record, when it comes to labor policies, the water is much murkier.
Consider the harrowing story of a young Indonesian man named Yusril. He signed up to work on a South Korean-flagged fishing vessel off the coast of New Zealand. He was forced to work 16-hour days and paid about a dollar an hour. He was verbally abused and beaten, and if he dared walk off the job, the agent threatened to fine him and seize all of his family's meager wealth.
One more important detail about this story, the fish that Yusril caught and processed might have ended up being sold to American wholesalers and restaurants.
Benjamin Skinner is a senior fellow at the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University. His piece, The Fishing Industry's Cruelest Catch, appeared recently in Bloomberg Businessweek. He found that American businesses like Sam's Club and P.F. Chang's are importing fish from companies that do business with what resemble modern-day slave ships off the coast of New Zealand. And Benjamin Skinner joins us from New York. Welcome to Radio Boston, Benjamin. Good to have you.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Very, very powerful piece. Very troubling. Fill in the details, if you would, about the agreement that this 28-year-old man signed. You call him Yusril in the story. That's a pseudonym. Tell us about what happened to him, about this agreement that he signed.
Sure. I've been writing about slavery for the better part of 10 years now, and I mostly focus on victims in all sorts of underground economies. This was a situation where you had a victim who was desperately poor, wanted to work in the fishing industry, didn't understand quite the compromise that he was taking, signed a contract which I've seen a copy of the contract, and it looks like an indentured servitude contract out of the 18th century. Once he was on this ship, as you say, off the coast of New Zealand, he was effectively the property of this fishing vessel. Couldn't walk away without dire consequences to his family. And he was operating under threat. He was verbally and physically abused. He and his shipmates were sexually abused. One thing I didn't expect to find, but did find, was endemic sexual abuse on these boats, as reported by not only Yusril but over two dozen others. And as you say, the kicker for me was the fish that he was catching winds up on American plates.
Well, I want to get to that in a minute, but first I want to be very clear about when we use terms like modern day slavery. As you report, Yusril willfully enters into this contract, but this kind of coerced labor and debt bondage essentially amounts to what the UN calls modern day slavery, right?
Absolutely. And to be very clear, when I'm talking about slavery, I'm not talking about some metaphor. These are people who were forced to work, held through fraud under threat of violence for no pay beyond subsistence. By that mere definition, there are more slaves in the world today than at any point in human history. And I wrote a book about this called A Crime So Monstrous, where I went abroad and on five continents found human beings being bought and sold and used in these circumstances.
And how common are stories like Yusril's within the fishing industry, within the global fishing industry?
It's hard to say. This is very much an underground economy within an already opaque business, an already opaque industry. One of the most stunning things to me, you led with the seafood industry conference there in Boston, and one of the most stunning things to me as we went through this process of tracing this fish was how little we could find out by asking retailers, wholesalers, and restaurants where they got their fish from. We really had to rely heavily on background sources. We had to rely on a whole lot of people that took risks to their own careers by telling us where the fish came from. The bottom line for me was, if you want to find out where your fish comes from, you can't, because most of these places won't tell you.
Interesting. Well, you say in the article, we know that you found out, for example, that U.S. companies, including Sam's Club and P.F. Chang's, import fish from industries, from companies that do business with the ships, essentially, that people like Yusril were on. But we don't know for a fact if they actually imported any of the seafood directly from Yusril's boat. But I'm wondering what you could find out directly from Sam's Club or P.F. Chang's. What did they say?
Sure.
What did they tell you?
Sure. First of all, with both Sam's Club and P.F. Chang's, there were very different responses once we confronted them before we went to press with this. Sam's Club was extraordinarily responsive. They pledged a full-scale investigation of their entire supply chain. The results of that investigation I haven't seen yet. P.F. Chang's, on the other hand, while we had on background sources that confirmed that they were buying the squid that was caught on those ships, on the two vessels that we were focusing in most closely on in New Zealand. After the piece came out, and prior to the piece coming out, they didn't give us a response as to what they were doing to clean up their supply chain. And as of now, I still don't have a response from them.
Mm. Now, one of the big players in your story is a company, a fisheries company in New Zealand called United Fisheries, which buys fish from the ships that are violating human rights. What does United Fisheries have to say about what they do? You approach them, you try to get some answers, right?
Sure. After we got more advanced with the investigation, they refused to cooperate with us in terms of giving us on record comments. Prior to publication, they wrote us and said, "You don't have permission to write about us." That's not how journalism works, as you know.
Yeah.
So we haven't heard comment from them since the story ran. We do know that there is a case pending in the New Zealand High Courts at the moment where a number of those workers, as I write in the piece, eventually face the risks and very much to their, speaking to their courage, they walked off en masse and demanded to be paid. Demanded to be paid minimum wage as they were due under New Zealand law. Those cases are still pending in the New Zealand High Courts, and according to United, they won't comment on the case until that case is settled by the High Courts.
One other question, we have time, I think, for one more. What happened to Yusril?
This is one of these deeply personal matters to me. Yusril was targeted shortly after the piece came out by the recruiters. He has had to go into hiding with his family, including his 22-year-old wife and their 1-year-old son. And I would say to anybody who is connected with that business, it is one thing to come after me, and I invite criticism of the piece. I don't think you'll be able to find very much. My reporting is pretty bulletproof, thanks to the terrific team at the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism. Hmm. But to target a source, to target a vulnerable source at the point end of the spear in rural Indonesia is about as despicable a business practice as I can imagine.
Well, Benjamin, I have to ask this finally. For the average consumer listening to this story, very troubling, whether you're eating fish in a restaurant or buying it from Costco or Whole Foods or Trader Joe, wherever you shop, what can you do to ensure that the fish is being caught humanely, that the folks who are processing that fish are being treated humanely?
I certainly think asking retailers, asking wholesalers, and asking restaurants, A, where the fish comes from, B, how it was processed and how it was caught. If consumers don't ask, if it's not high up in the outbox of consumers, it won't be high up in the inbox of corporations.
Well, Benjamin Skinner, a senior fellow at the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University, his piece, "The Fishing Industry's Cruelest Catch," appeared in the recent issue of Bloomberg Businessweek. You can find a link on our website, radioboston.org. Benjamin Skinner, thank you very much for your work.
Thank you.